I noticed a problem in my life, so I wrote myself an exhortation, and it's something I needed to hear, and I thought I'd share it with you, too. We read, like Jason said in John 17, some of these final thoughts of Jesus before the crucifixion. It's touching, I think, that his prayer at the end was really for his brethren. In the time of this, his own greatest personal need, he had their interest at mind. I want to talk this morning about one thing that he said, this common phrase. If you've been around Christadelphians for more than a year, I'm sure you've heard it more than once. I think that Jesus had an important message for us when he said it. And I'm afraid that we've tweaked that message a little bit. And it'd be better for us if we got it straight. So let's look at verses 14 to 16. That's where the phrase comes from. Let's look at them one more time. Jesus says, "I have given them your word, and the world has hated them because they are not of the world, just as I am not of the world. I do not ask that you take them out of the world, but that you keep them from the evil one. They are not of the world, just as I am not of the world." It's from that we have developed this phrase that we use, and you've heard it plenty of times, in the world but not of it. Now, I want to be clear, that statement is very true. I don't disagree with it, I don't want to argue with it. Right? We are in this world. We are part of this world's operating system. Most Christadelphians work for worldly employers, and we put our money in worldly banks, and we buy our groceries at worldly grocery stores, and we cook them up in homes built by worldly people. We are definitely in the world. And, most definitely, we should not be a part of it. We shouldn't get caught up in the things that go on around us, that people around us get involved in and caught up in. It's none of our business to debate politics. None of our business to complain about municipal regulations, to care about the success or the failure of celebrities, to concern ourselves over the stock market, or even worry about the weather, because all of those things are temporal. All those things are here today and gone tomorrow, and our goal is to be here tomorrow. So the phrase does capture some truth. We're in the world, but not of it. I just don't think it does a good enough job of giving us the whole picture. I think that this catchy little phrase gives the wrong impression about our mission in this world as followers of Christ. When you say in the world but not of it, it seems to give the drift of saying, well, you know, we're stuck here in this world, but what we really need to do is to make sure that we're not of it. And if you look at it that way, the focus is on our unfortunate condition of having to be in the world. And our mission, our goal, our purpose seems to be to not be of it. So the force of the statement is moving us away from the world. It's like saying, we're stuck here in this world, but let's concentrate our energy on not being a part of it. Now, I'd have to agree, there might be some circumstances where that outlook would be helpful in your life. But I think something essential is being downplayed. Take a look at the context of what Jesus says here in John 17, 14 to 16. Two times, both in verse 14 and again in verse 16, Jesus says that we are not of this world. It's very clear that Jesus does not want his followers to be of this world. But notice that for Jesus, being not of this world isn't the destination in these verses. It's the starting place. It's not where things are moving toward. It's where they're moving away from. He is not of this world, And he states that his followers are not of this world either. But you get the sense that Jesus isn't resigning himself and us to this unfortunate position. Instead, it seems like he's rallying us to the challenge. Enter verse 18. As you sent me into the world, so I have sent them into the world. Jesus has sent us into the world. Did you notice what verse 15 says? Verse 15, I do not ask that you take them out of the world. Jesus isn't asking God to take his followers out of the world, but he's just praying for them to be sent into the world. So he begins with us not being of the world and prays for us as we are sent into the world. And as you think about it, I think that makes an important difference. So it's going to be impossible for us to do, but I'd love it if we could change that old saying, and instead of saying in the world but not of it, to say something a little bit more like not of the world but sent into it. It's a huge difference. Instead of the focus being on us just huddling up over in some corner, you know, and doing our best to not be a part of what's going on around us, instead, we're sent out on a mission. We have a job. We have a duty. We have a responsibility given to us by our Lord Jesus to go out there into the world. Now, we're not on a mission to just completely disassociate ourselves from everything that goes on around us. We're called by Jesus to go out there and actively associate ourselves with people. How else would we ever be successful in preaching? Jesus' assumption in John 17 is that those who have embraced him, those who have identified with him and been baptized, are clearly not of this world. And his summons in our sending is to send us out into this world on a mission to advance the gospel through the making of disciples. Now at this point, my mind went to Matthew 5, and maybe yours is too. So let's look at Matthew 5 a little bit. And I think the verses here are helpful. Matthew 5, it's the light of the world, verse 14. Matthew 5, verses 14 to 16, where Jesus says, "You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a stand, and it gives light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who's in heaven." That's the first thought that came to my mind when I kind of reoriented myself and realized that, yeah, we're not of this world, but we're sent out into it for a reason. You are a light to the world. Let your light shine before others so they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven. So that important commandment of Jesus isn't really in keeping with the idea of us just kind of blocking ourselves away from everyone in an effort to try to not be of the world. I think sometimes this first example that Jesus gives in verse 14 can lead us astray. He says, "A city set on a hill cannot be hidden." And you know, growing up, I always had this mental picture of me as a Christadelphian, you know, being a lighthouse set on a high hill. And all we have to do is to show forth God's light, and anyone interested will draw themselves to us. And I realize that that's probably the least active version of preaching that I could ever imagine. You know, all I'm going to do is quietly live my own life over here in this corner by myself. And if anyone takes the time to bother to come over and talk to me, then I'll tell them about the truth. Jesus says, you are the light of the world. He doesn't say to hide yourself away from it. He says the opposite. He actually says that you shouldn't be hidden. You shouldn't be off in a corner by yourself. This is the Jesus who he got himself invited over to people's house for dinner. People who all the righteous people thought were sinners. People who were prostitutes. To do that, he had to be accessible to people. He had to be a part of the people that he ran into. Now, he wasn't a part of the world's evil and sinful ways, but he was sent into it as a light to show forth the glory of God's plan of salvation. That's when I got depressed, right? Because let's be honest, this isn't easy. This isn't an easy mission. What we're called to do is not for the faint-hearted. So if you're feeling that your faith is kind of weak and you might not be able to handle the temptation, it's probably wise for you to distance yourself from any temptation. But just because it's easier for us to live that way, for us to justify our exclusionism by saying we're not of the world, that doesn't make it right. We're called to go out into the world and to influence people for good, to change them, to improve them, to make their lives better because we are a part of their life. That's the catch, right? I mean, the real issue is who's doing the influencing and who's getting influenced. We know 1 Corinthians 15 says, don't be deceived. Don't be deceived. Bad company ruins good morals. And that is so true. But our calling is to be sent to shine our lights amidst bad company. If we're going to share the gospel, we're going to be around some people that don't really share our same level of morality. People that we just shake our heads and can't believe what we just heard or what we just saw. If we're going to go out being sent by Jesus into the world, and the world brings us down to their level of depravity, their level of baseness, their level of trivial monotony, then we're the ones being influenced. Not the other way around. Remember we read about Jesus saying that we're the light of the world. The verse right before that says that we're the salt of the earth. That's a great analogy that Christ used. Salt is so powerful in bringing out the goodness in ingredients. It can take a boring piece of meat and turn it into something great. It even works on vegetables, Allie. You know, you put some salt there, and all the flavor comes out. Something that maybe you really wouldn't want to eat otherwise. You salt it, and it becomes good. That's what we're supposed to do with people. We're supposed to interact with people. People who may not have a very high level of morality, we're supposed to interact with them and influence them to want to improve their lives, to want to have a relationship with Christ, to want to be like Christ, that we have shown them in our life, in our decisions, in our actions, in our words. And the rest of that verse is pretty rough. Take a look at Matthew 5:13. If we aren't doing that, if we're not influencing them, if we're not helping them to become better people, then what good are we? Look at that verse. It's what he says. You are the salt of the earth, verse 13. If the salt has lost its taste, how shall saltiness be restored? It's no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled under people's feet. If Christ has sent you into the world to influence people for good, And you're hiding over the corner because you're shy and you're nervous and you're afraid. And you don't want to be polluted. You don't want to become sinful and dirty and touch anything that's bad. Then what good are you? That's what it's saying, right? We aren't good for anything unless we do what we're sent to do. That's as far as I got. Sorry. I got depressed and kind of stopped right there. It's a pretty important point, though. It's important to Christ. It's important to God that we fulfill that role. That's one of the reasons that Christ died. You know, Wednesday night, Jim was talking about redemption, and he showed how important it is for us to realize that not only was Christ crucified, but we have to die to the old man and be raised in newness of life. Jesus' true followers have not only been crucified to the world, but also raised to new life. We're not only given new life, but we're given this mission as well. Jesus has sent us back in the world to free others, to rescue others who need salvation as well. We've been rescued from the darkness and given the light, not merely to flee the darkness, but to guide our steps as we go back in to rescue others. And Jesus knew that this was a tough mission. He knew that this was hard. And that's why he prayed for us in John 17. That's why at the end of his life, his prayer was focused on us, not on him. So I want to close by returning back to John 17 and just read a couple of these verses. John 17, verse 20. Jesus says to God, I don't ask for these only. It's not just for these 12. But for also for those who will believe in me through their words. Jesus isn't just praying for you. He's praying for your neighbors and the people you work with and your uncle and aunt and everyone else that you can influence to believe in him through your words. That they may all be one, just as you, Father, are in me and I in you, that they also may be in us, so that the world may believe that you have sent me. I'm the first to say that it's a tough job that we have. It would be easier if our job was simply to be in the world and not of it. But our job is to not be of the world, but be sent into it. It's not just about holding our breath and huddling off in a corner and trying to make it through life in this sinful world. It's harder than that. It's about being sent out into this dark world of evil and still finding the strength and the energy to shine forth as a light. Shine forth as a light before others so that they can see your good works. You know, it doesn't really do my neighbor any good for me to do all my good works here. He's not going to see it. And his wife just died of cancer. And he needs to see it. And I'm going over Wednesday, so pray for me. It's a big job, but the reward is even greater. Jesus prayed in John 17, not only for himself, not only to strengthen us in this difficult job, but also for all those who will believe because they've heard our message. He prayed that we all may be one in our Lord God. And that reward is greater than any of the challenges that we'll face.